Hello and welcome to the 112th episode of the Hulkcast with me, James Rushton. As usual, we've got a mixed edition to bring you today. We've got goals, drama, joy and despair. And to analyse the action of the past week, I'm delighted to bring on Ronson Brown. How you doing, mate?
Good afternoon. How are you?
Oh, good. It's raining over here. I've heard it's not so bad over there in Canada.
Yeah, I got just a couple of clouds and it's actually a bit of a nice day. It's been raining like this whole summer. It's just been rain. So, like weekends are always just thunder and lightning. So it's nice we actually have a weekend where it's not going to rain.
Yeah, and how are you following Villa at the moment? Is it through the AVTV live thing?
Yeah, a little bit. It's been obviously a lot tougher in championship, but we used to get quite a few games on the TV, and that was really good to follow on. But yeah, lately it's just been kind of streams where you can, or a Periscope when you can.
Yeah, so... Yeah, as I said, it's been a bit of a mixed week, hasn't it? That first match of the week on Tuesday, it didn't go well. Reading beat Villa by 2-1 in a match that Villa failed to get a pair of hands on. Until it was, I think we started to kick in at about 75 minutes, and it's too late to get started then. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, that was a game where I think people went a little bit nuts after, but almost rightfully so in a couple of situations where... You don't want people to kind of overreact, but when you kind of see the product that they kind of put out there, you kind of go, well, geez, this is not even close to acceptable, right? Like possession was what, 33%?
It was low.
Yeah.
I'd venture to say it was lower, I feel.
So I've got the stats up on the Villa app, and they listed it 33, and I feel like it might be even less than that.
I think that's generous. If it is 33, I won't argue, but it didn't feel like that at all. It felt like they barely touched the ball. I think there was a false stat going around about them having 20 passes or so in 40 minutes. I think that's impossible. Even you can't be that bad.
No.
That was not a good game. And for many reasons, I think people are too quick to attach the banner of defensive football onto that, but... Even with defensive football, I think you're still looking to score, aren't you? And it's more patient. We were just going gung-ho, I felt. We were kicking 90-yard balls up the pitch, trying to score. Yeah, it didn't really work out. Not much worked out on the day.
Yeah, do you think a lot of that had to do with a hangover from the Cardiff match?
Oh, well, we got slammed by Cardiff, and they're keeping up the form, apparently.
Yeah.
Alex Carson on Twitter, Crash Carson, he follows the stats and the expected goals, obviously, because it's part of his columns and articles at 7500 to Holt. And he says that it's Cardiff that look like they're the team to beat at the moment. So, yeah, I think we just got beat by a good team, really, and we couldn't recover.
Yeah.
The Cardiff match wasn't acceptable, don't get me wrong, but that Reading match, it was there for the taking. That's the most upsetting thing.
It almost felt like it was a hangover from that other loss, where
definitely.
They just hadn't gotten up yet. And there was actually something I saw on Twitter by the Villa Gorilla. This was on the 14th of August, where... he said that Lambert's "we go again" culture has created an apathy after a loss. Keane mentioned it now. Bruce has a player apathy thing that's really killing people. And that was something that I kind of thought of, where after they got demolished by Cardiff, Reading, there was almost like they just were heartbroken, you know?
Yeah. There was a lot of changes. We saw Richie Delatte come in. We saw Berke Bjarnason start. Andre Green came in as well, I think, after he wasn't really starting, was he, in those first few games. I think that's the majority of the changes. And Conor Hourihan played as well, and we'll get onto his form later because he's certainly an exceptional player. But we did rotate a lot for that Reading game, and nothing really came off at all. And I'm not sure what the plan was going into that, because as I said, it didn't seem like defensive football because we weren't willing to hold onto the ball and be patient. It seems, it's the irony is it was more attacking because we wanted to get that ball as fast as quickly to the goal as possible.
Yeah,
and it wasn't coming off for us. One thing I will talk about on this match is Andre Green had what many assume to be a golden opportunity to give Villa the lead early on, but the expected goals ratio on that was like 0.05, in fact, so not even half of 1% of a goal. Be expected from that, and Steve Roos has hung his hat on that as something that damned Villa on the occasion, and I don't think that's very fair.
Oh, are we still there?
Yeah, hello.
No, sorry, just I went silent there for a minute.
Oh, I was speaking about Andre Green. Did you catch that?
Yeah, you were saying that he with the expected, but I just cut off right after that. So do you mind picking up there?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, Andre Green, he had a gilt-edged chance to, quote unquote, as Steve Bruce said, where he was through on goal and it looked like it should have went in, but it didn't. And the expected goal ratio on it was 0.05, which isn't anywhere close to being a goal you'd expect to happen. And we can see that for expected goals. And he's hung his hat on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he was somebody who really came out yesterday and made a point that that Reading wasn't going to be the standard and it was going to be the exception, which is, I think, brilliant.
Yeah, I mean that's fair to say because that Cardiff match was bad, and if there's a match worse, it was a Reading match. I don't think we've seen Villa play that poor in a long time. I mean Villa have been bad for a while. Don't get me wrong, Ronson,
No,
but I don't think I can't remember seeing something like that.
I mean, it's been bad in a lot of places, but that one was just so downtrodden of an effort, right? And I know I'm almost repeating myself, but I feel like they were just almost distraught after Cardiff, and they were still on the road. If that game had been at home, I think Villa Park would have given them, quite a bit of extra energy, and I think that's going to be a huge part for the rest of the season moving forward. But yeah, to have to go back to back on the road after a really bad loss, it felt like it was, part of the disease, right?
Yeah, but it's almost like a cancer, isn't it? This loss culture, this losing culture at Villa, and hopefully we're turning that around. We'll come on to the Norwich game later, but directly after that Reading game, a lot of pressure fell onto the shoulders of Steve Bruce. People wanted his head to roll. Do you reckon that's natural to feel that way, Ronson, or did we come to a conclusion too quick?
Both. I think both were completely fair. And I think there were examples of people who were putting stats out that would say, Bruce should be fired, that I think made sense in some way, shape, or form. But in other cases, I think it was a little bit too much. And so Villazone on Twitter tweeted on the 16th that his first 40 games as the Villa boss were 16 wins, 8 draws, and 16 losses. And I don't know if it's necessarily fair to really throw last year into this season because it's a new team. There's a lot of new players in. There's been a preseason, so I think you do have to give him a bit of a clean slate, but you can't ignore old tactics and the same things that happen over and over again. I just don't know if we have enough of a sample size after Cardiff and Reading to say definitively one way or another that change won't take place.
Yeah, I mean, as you can say, it's fair for people to want to expect change because with losses and bad form, you do expect changes to happen. We see managers get sacked for little things these days, and Steve Bruce's that start wasn't good at all. And we can go back to the back end of last year, even in the start of 2017, and add it all up together and say this is not good enough. I think we need to come to separate that from now because, as you said, it's a different team. A lot's happened, and we need to get to October and assess then rather than assessing now, which could be far too early. There's a lot to take in about that. One thing I will say though is I think a lot of fans are quick to dismiss the opinions. There's two opinions about this really. There's either you don't want Bruce to be in, and you want Bruce to stay, or you want to get more time to give him. And there's a kind of middle ground in between those. But I think, based on the evidence of the Reading fans, people would have felt stupid saying, "I want Bruce to stay." And based on the evidence of the Norwich match, which we'll come on to, people say you're an idiot for wanting Bruce out. So I think we need to find some kind of middle ground where we need to discover what's acceptable
Yeah.
for the manager, really. What we
Tact.
need to think about is. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah, no, I was going to say tactics aside, I think the thing that really concerned me was his comments after the other match where he was saying he couldn't get the balance right. And he really came across like he was defeated personally and he just didn't seem to have an answer. And that I thought was really, really a bad sign because you want him to come across to the media, the players, the organization, and other teams that he knows what's going on and he has answers for these things. Even if he doesn't, I would rather him lie about it and say that he knows exactly what he needs to change instead of admitting that he didn't really have an answer. So that was where I was really concerned. And then when it kind of comes down to saying that, oh, tactics this and tactics that, that's a huge part of it as well. However, I think with, Kodjer being out and Jednak being out, Grealish being injured for quite a while, I think you kind of have to look at the first couple of games of the season as under a grain of salt,
It's a difficult one because you can understand why people would want Bruce out, and you can definitely understand why people would want Bruce in, but the balance thing's and the things he comes out with after a match are quite weird. Like, this is Steve Bruce's biggest job. This is his hardest task as well. There's a lot of expectation on him. He's obviously getting compensated well, and this is, you know, success here comes rewarded with reputation, financial, you know, treasures and all that. This isn't, you know, he's not suffering, he's not a victim, and he's not a prisoner of Aston Villa. He can leave at any time he wants. And after the Cardiff game, especially, and after the Reading game, he seemed, like, as you said, defeated, and I don't want that from Steve Bruce. If anything, we hired him to be the opposite of that. And that did strike me out as something being incredibly weird. Like, is he going to resign?
Yeah, I thought the same. And it kind of felt like the opposite of a Tim Sherwood moment, you know, because Tim Sherwood was very brash and bold-chested with a lot of the things, and I think that really sold a lot of people on personality, right? I mean, everyone says Tim Sherwood's favorite person is Tim Sherwood. But in sports, sometimes that's not a bad thing, right? Like, it's a confidence that inspires. So that's why I was really concerned with Bruce after that other game, because I thought, oh, he's either going to walk or, you know, the chairman's going to see it and absolutely loathe those comments, which I'm sure he wasn't happy about either.
No, because it did feel like giving up. You know, when we lost to Leicester, that turnaround in 2015, was it? The 3-2. And Sherwood came out to the press conference and he was defeated. He was distraught. He was destroyed. He was red in the face. He looked like he'd been crying, in fact.
Yeah.
And that took a lot of Sherwood's spirit out, which is all he is, really. There's not much plan to him. It's all gusto, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the wind's taken out of his sails. There's not much left.
No, exactly. And I think that's something that as a manager, you have to make sure you maintain, right? Because there are so many different facets to how you come across in pre-match and post-match that can make or break you, I think.
Yes, certainly. And Bruce wasn't looking like the manager we wanted after Reading and after Cardiff. It was two matches in a row. And he did lash out a bit at the press and maybe the fans a little bit, saying some of the things said about him were vile. I don't really see that, to be honest. I just see a lot of fans who are kind of fed up with how things are going, and they didn't see that there was a manager that believed in the team, believed in himself, or believed in the fans, Ronson.
Yeah, and there is something, a quote someone here said that I think is really applicable, where they said, all fans want is someone to come in and win. And if you can't do that, they want someone different. And you shouldn't be upset about
win.
That.
Yeah, you either win, or you look good trying to win, or you have a plan. And it didn't look like Bruce was in any of those positions. He kind of looked like a man who didn't know what direction he wanted to go, nor the direction he wanted to take the club. And that was quite frustrating. And we didn't hear much from his higher-up, Tony Shaw, either, the chairman of Aston Villa, until quite late on, when he come out with on a philosophical tangent, didn't he, Ronson?
Yeah, and it was something that I think really speaks to where he is organizationally. And it's a little eccentric, you know, simply quoting page and verse from a book, you know, and then, you know, looking onto Twitter to find somebody who actually has the book or an excerpt. But like, if he could just come out and say exactly what he thinks, that would be good. But I mean, for now, it gives us something to kind of go on about. But he said the difference between leaders and the average is constant. If leadership performance is high, the average goes up. So in there, I think he's kind of saying that if he and Bruce and his team are performing well enough, everyone around them will. And the effective executive here, where he's talking about himself, says that he needs to know that it's easier to raise the performance of one leader, i.e. Steve Bruce in this example, than it is to raise the performance of the whole. So that way he's saying that if he can raise Steve Bruce or the manager to a better standing or a better performance, then everyone else around, coaching staff, players, and everything like that will go up as well. So then it says that he must make sure that he puts into leadership the kind of standard-setting, performance-making person who has the strength to do the outstanding. So in that case, I think it's a bit of an endorsement of Steve Bruce, because he is obviously still in his position, saying that he is the right person for the job, and that way he and Bruce need to do a better job with the players, not necessarily making a revolving door here.
Yeah, and I mean, I like to see communication from the higher-ups, especially when it's on such a thoughtful level as that. Wouldn't you agree, Ronson?
Yeah, and one of the things I thought was interesting is I think he picked his words very, very carefully, because he went a couple of days without, you know, going on Twitter or social media. And he's somebody who is very active on those those platforms. So, you know, it was very calculated. I would have rather him kind of sat in front of a camera or written something himself and said, you know, where he was and what he thought was going on, what he thought needed to happen. But instead he, you know, kind of just posted page number and publication and said, figure it out yourself. So it kind of gave us something to do some detective work on, which I guess was kind of fun in its own way, but it's eccentric in its own sense. But I think it speaks volumes as to where we kind of should put ourselves. You know, it does show that he took time before kind of reacting as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, Tony is a guy who likes puzzles. We know that from the emojis. We know that from the equations. We know a lot about him now. He's a thoughtful man. As I said, he came out of fist swinging last year. He seems a bit more angry now. He seems a bit more thoughtful and a bit more measured. And I think that's good for the whole club, really, because we saw Di Matteo getting sacked quite quickly into the season last year. It seemed like a long time he was here, but it was only 10, 12 games.
Yeah.
I think last year's Tony would have pulled the trigger on Bruce by now. But I think we're all better off for a manager sticking around for at least a little bit longer. And I mean, that Norwich game we'll come on to now, we benefited from Steve Bruce being fired up. That match went a lot better. Now, before we get into the meat of it, I want to know what your expectations were for this game.
I was really thinking it was going to be a 2-1 win. I didn't think it was going to go as well as it did, and I don't think anybody did. But I figured being back at Villa Park, I thought that they would have a real opportunity to come out and be a lot better, right? So the fact that they were able – I watched the highlights again this morning, and boy, it could have been like 7-4, I think, with a little bit of luck on either side.
Yeah.
I think we still would have won even if we had some bad luck, but with luck – you know, on both sides, it could have been 7-4, not just 4-2. So that's good as well that, you know, they didn't hit a bunch of crossbars and we got a little bit lucky. You know, we had some bad luck as well. So I think that that's a good omen moving forward.
What about Keenan Davis?
Oh, brilliant, right?
Yeah.
I think he deserves at least an honorable mention goal there. I think he was a huge part as to why, you know, Conor Horahan had so many great chances. And I think even Henry Lansbury deserves fair mention. I thought he did a really good job on certainly Horahan's second goal to just distribute the ball there at that end of the pitch.
Very smart. And I think it was good to see Horahan score 3 goals, in fact, the hat-trick. And we haven't seen that at Villa Park. I think the stat was there the other day. It was 12,000 or so days, 9,000 days since a midfielder scored a goal. Seems like that. A hat-trick for Villa, and Conor Horan certainly showed a bit of that Barnsley form. I think we're all better off for stuff like that.
It's beautiful and heartbreaking at the same time that it's something we got to see and celebrate, but something that we haven't seen so often before. So hopefully it's a sign of things to come, but hopefully we don't have to wait too long again for it to happen.
Does that mean the ghost of Christian Benteke is finally banished?
Hopefully. That'd be nice.
Well, Davis more so, the ghost of Fabian Delph.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, I thought Keenan Davis reminded me a little bit in a way of Callum O'Hare, just with being young and being from the youth team, and something that I think Villa have to really, really take advantage of with financial fair play rules. They need to have contributions from those young kids who, you know, they're not going to cost you a transfer fee or anything like that. So to be able to bring them up and develop them is only going to help them.
I think a smart club makes good use of the people who aren't wanted by their parent clubs, but they also they look within and promote. And I think that's something we've seen with Davis. We've took him from Biggleswade, and he was kicked out of Stevenage because he didn't fit the model and he wasn't strong enough or talented enough. And he bossed a championship game against Norwich, and I think that's quite a thing to say. Now, it's not exactly Premier League football. You know, it's not City United. It's not coming on in like that cauldron, but he's come on against Norwich and he's played really well. I think that's something to be really, really proud of. A standing ovation in your first game, being applauded off the pitch. That's special. Yeah. That's special. And Horahan, you know, it's a shame that Horahan had to play so good, because that was Davis's match. That was Keenan Davis's match. Great team. With all the positives, though, I think there's a few negatives, and I don't want to be the party pooper here, but Villa's defending on the day wasn't that great. I mean, I think letting 2 goals in, it was very, in a way, it's a bit fair to Norwich. As you said, it could, on any other day, it could have been about 7-4. But I think we were caught out for their goals, and taking Alan Hutton off when he did was quite a semi masterstroke by Bruce.
Yeah, I thought Hutton certainly at that point in time needed to come off, and hadn't he have, I thought it would have been 3-3 before we knew it. So that was a really good move there. I'm not crazy about Hutton myself, but the fact that we responded to each goal that they scored and didn't kind of shit our pants really, really gave me some hope, especially for the home games we have coming up, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Norwich is the one you want to win because in the perfect world, it's a 6-point, and Norwich are a team who should, by all accounts, be at the upper end of the Championship table. Losing against them is just going to do your promotion hopes damage in more ways than one. How are you going to lose on those 3 points, and B, you're giving them straight to someone who's going to, you're going to be competing with? Villa's defending, mainly Alan Hutton on that right side, was bad because at a point, Cameron Jerome and Josh Murphy, I believe it was, were just getting behind him and calling for the ball, screaming for it, begging, please Pep, put me through because I'm going to do him. And they did. And very lucky to not have conceded a few when he was on the pitch. He was taken off for James Bree. And then another thing happened. They found the perfect ball right through to Oliveira on their team. And John Terry was in no man's land. And I think we don't want to see that from someone so experienced. I mean, you can say it's a great cross in that he got caught out by, but it's John Terry, isn't it?
Yeah, there was one where you kind of look at it a little bit slowly and see he kind of tries to make a jump for it and have the... Yeah, it's like trying to watch, like, what is he, 36? Trying to watch a 36-year-old man jump or something?
Yeah, if it's Chris Samba or Nathan Baker, 6'3" Nathan Baker, he gets to it, but John Terry isn't. That's the goal as well, that's their second goal. And I think John Terry, we've bought him to be so much better than that. And a lot of people won't see that and they'll say John Terry had a good game. And I won't disagree, but he's been bought as an upgrade. And so far it looks like it's the same, if not a tiny bit worse, just a tiny bit worse. I think we looked secure at the back last season, and I think our defence last season was one of our few highlights, apart from Kodja and Jedinak.
And I completely agree.
It doesn't seem the same this year, and I hate to say, I just don't think this John Terry thing needs a bit more. I think it needs a bit more time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's his first handful of games with a club that isn't Chelsea and you know, England internationally ever. So, you know, I think you need to give him a little bit more time. It's a new place, and it's only been a handful of matches too, right? Like there's so much yet to come, and it's only the second match at Villa Park of the year. So it's not like we can write it off as, you know, game 15 or 16. So I think he gets a kind of a pass on this one, but I think it's an error that should be accredited, that, you know, kind of, if it doesn't get any better, we can point to this as the beginning, but I think he has to be given an opportunity to at least kind of get his roots kind of moved.
Yeah, I certainly agree. It's just a shame that it just seemed like the weak link for most of their chances was Alan Hutton, but when Terry needed to step up, he wasn't able to, unfortunately. But yeah, as I said, I think you can only give him time, and if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But yeah, if it works out, I mean, we've got John Terry at the back, and that's not something to complain about at all. Do you have a favourite part of that Norwich match? I think there was a lot of highlights.
Well, the Andy Green goal was something spectacular, wasn't it?
Yeah, perfect. That was a great finish, and you can't really appreciate it when you're sitting behind the goal in the whole end. I think that's a perfect TV goal. That's a really good angle on that camera. Pretty sweet.
How much do you reckon that Hurricane's second goal deflected on that one?
That was obviously because it was shooting up towards the north stand, so it was away. And when I saw it, I turned to my dad and went, "Did that go in?" Because it looked like one behind when he pulls his foot back and has a shot, and you see the ball before it deflects, and you're like, "Oh, it's going towards the keeper." Then, oh no, it's up and over and in. So, yeah, I think that was quite a hearty deflection for that second goal.
Yeah, I think with the green goal, I think that's got to be probably their goal of the year so far, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. My favourite goal on the day was Green's goal, certainly. I thought that second goal from Hurahan would have been my favourite, but it turns out it took a massive deflection. So I was like, that's an insane curve, that is. How did that go in? But yeah, it turns out.
I thought the same.
Yeah, big deflection. That Andre Green goal was something spectacular, though. Really good finish. And I mean, he's come close so many times. And there's a chance later he should have buried as well. It was another point blank header. And, you know, he got his goal in front of the whole end and it helped us win. I can't complain about that. Any other positives? I thought that Al Mohammadi looked good on the wing and he should have had a goal as well. I'll crush it off the crossbar late on.
Actually, you know, well, we did take a minute to kind of criticize John Terry there, but there was one opportunity where Alan Hutton just got turnstiled, and Terry had a really good clear. I thought he had a really good clear.
Yeah, if we're gonna criticize him, we need to highlight what he's done good at. And I think a lot of what he brings to Villa is some kind of measure and patience. I mean, sometimes he's that captain, leader, legend figure who'll rush to the midfield to clear a header and get himself injured. But there's also a lot of measure and patience, and I think that's something that we'll begin to be able to appreciate more on as we go on. But yeah, I think Alan Hutton, he was getting writ off that entire game. So certainly later on, he seems to just lose it and just switch off. And James Bree brought a bit of more balance to it, and that was good to see because we could have went under.
Yeah, like I said, when it was 3-2, I was really concerned. I was sweating there, sitting watching, and I'm sure you've kind of probably felt the same because they did give a bit of a go, but we really responded really, really well, and that's what's given me a lot of hope because, not to get ahead of ourselves, but 3 out of our next 4 matches are at Villa Park.
Yes, so I mean, we've got the away game at Bristol. I think it's Brentford, Middlesbrough. So yeah, they're quite tough, aren't they? Actually.
Yeah.
We've really got, after this international break, we've really got to hit the ground with our feet running, so to speak. Any final thoughts on Norwich?
Yeah, I think just the fact that we were able to respond to the 2 goals and didn't kind of sit back or fall apart is the best thing that we can kind of rely on. And the fact that we could have even had a few extra, you know, it's not like the 4 were, you know, not deserved. So.
Exactly, it was a good win all around. I think there's some definite negative to take from it. But it's the first match we've had for a long time where the positives are there to see. It's clear, and I can't be more happy than that.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, like the fact that Keenan Davis could have probably had 2 himself, not to mention Jorge probably could have had 5, that's just so perfect. And Callum O'Hare, who I've been a big supporter of early on, hadn't given it a chance yesterday, so maybe in the future we do see a combination of O'Hare and Davis and Koja when he's fit, and we're going to get Jednak back in the next coming days, so I don't think there's anywhere to go but up for this club.
And fingers crossed. I mean, we've come to this turn point a lot, haven't we? We thought that things are looking up and it doesn't seem out, but hopefully this will be our time to finally look up, and hopefully we carry that form on to our next game in Wigan. It's the second round of the Carabao Cup at home on Tuesday, the 22nd of August. We play Wigan Athletic at home. Ronson, what do you want from this game?
Continued hope. I'd like to see, you know, some of the youth kind of come through and show us why they should continue to play in the league.
Yes, certainly. I mean, we can't. There's not too much we can pin on the Carabao Cup game, especially in these early rounds, because you know it could go either way. Colchester should have beat us, to be completely blunt, in that away game. That was a bit of a back and forth match. But where we got Wigan at home, this should be a win. Nothing can be guaranteed. But I'd like to see Callum O'Hare grab the start. I'd like to see a bit more from Scott Hogan, maybe. I think he'll
maybe get a little bit less rain.
Yeah, definitely. If the weather's all right, that'd be good. Hopefully. Lower the risk of any injuries. And yeah, I mean, a good cup run's good for the team. I think losing now is just, you know, it's not in the league and you don't lose any points, but you don't want to just keep this losing culture going. We need to get a win.
No, yeah, that's the nail on the head there. And I remember a while ago when we bowed out of the cup, and I think we were still, it was 2 years in the Prem, and we kind of, there was a notion that, oh, well, now we don't have to worry about FA Cup matches. And I thought, well, then that's not a worry if you're winning.
Yeah,
right.
No, yeah, exactly. And people are like, oh, we don't want to win the cup because then we get European games. And I think that's something you worry about when you've won the fucking cup. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you don't win the cup, then you just can create this losing culture. You know, we went out the first round against Luton. That's not something to be proud of last year. And if we went out against Colchester, that wouldn't have been something to be proud of. And if we go out, lose to Wigan on Tuesday, that isn't something to be happy about. You can go, oh, we can concentrate on the league now. There's a lot of games, but we've got about 4 teams. We've got 4 teams worth of squad depth in our squad right now. We can field a team without any injuries in this cup. So, yeah, it's not something I'm particularly bothered about. But, you know, I wouldn't want to lose. I wouldn't go, oh, we can concentrate on the league now. It's a minor benefit.
It's easier to build off of a win than it is off of a loss, obviously. And I think that was the thing with the Reading matches. It was kind of leftovers from Cardiff. And hopefully Wigan can be the leftovers from Norwich, where we continue to, you know, maybe just miss the crossbar and actually get it in the net.
Exactly. And I mean, if you get to see Callum O'Hare start in that 10 position, if you get to see a bit more from Keenan Davis or even Scott Hogan, you know, that's not bad. That's not bad going at all. You know, it's our brightest stars from the youth at the moment, Keenan Davis and O'Hare especially. And that's really good to see. At the moment, I believe Wigan are flying in the league. One goal against, seven goals for, three games, one out of three, with 9 points if they go into this match. So, yeah, I mean, expect a bit of tiny bit of difficulty, I feel. And we couldn't really do Wigan in last year. They seemed like a team to kind of last out into the final whistle. So this would be a really good test of Villa's second string, and a win's a win.
Yeah, a win's a win. And it's, as far as development goes, that's, I think, the best case scenario, right?
Yeah, exactly. You want to use this cup to win, namely. You want to use it to build plans. You want to use it to give minutes, you know, first team minutes to these youth products who have got a lot of talent. I mean, we've had some fantastic youth products come through in the, you know, past 10 years that haven't made the grade. And I think this is probably one of our best youth classes of recent memory that I can think of. I mean, we had a D'Alfonso, Baker, Gardner, Clark class, and that didn't really turn out that well. The Grealish class, I think you only got Jack Grealish and Andre Green out of that. And this one is with Hepburn, Murphy, Davis, O'Hare, Doyle Hayes, Sullivan. It's, you know, there's a lot of talent. And Mitch Clark as well, and Sarkic in goal. There's a lot of talent that could come through to this first team. And giving them the cup games along with some first team stars, it's the way to go, I feel.
Completely. And, you know, the further that they do in these kind of cup matches, I think the more chance we'll get of seeing them in the league, right? And so that's I think, the best you can hope for. And I almost imagine if it had been not for timing in under-21 matches, we might have seen Callum O'Hare yesterday as well. So that's it's only positive, right? And that's, how good of a feeling is that? It's a Sunday. It's early yet still. There's time to rejoice. And, you know, we didn't have our ruined weekends from a terrible, bloody match.
No, yeah, and you haven't paid, you know, whatever. You know, if you paid your season ticket, or you paid for your ticket, or your AVTV, or even your internet connection, just to watch a Villa game, just to see him get beat. I know what it's like with the Cleveland Browns. You pay for that game, you pay for that game pass, it's like £145 odd, and you just watch them lose every single game. It's agony. Even if you're overseas, it's agony. And, you know, it's not discounted if you're on watching it on TV. We all know that. So, yeah. I mean, we all get a good weekend. We get the cup match to look forward to. And we'll see, we will probably see Callum O'Hare start 90 minutes, and that's brilliant. I think he's a real shining star so far.
Yeah, youth and speed, I think, go such a long way. And there's an attacking presence to him that it reminded me of Grealish when he broke in ages and ages and ages ago, where it's exciting. And I think he makes the other teams worry, and they have to kind of game plan for him, in a sense that that's not something we've seen a lot of at Villa for the last couple of years.
Yeah, definitely. O'Hare seems, he lit up that Colchester game in real difficult and adverse circumstances, but he'll have the run of the pitch when we come home to Villa Park on Tuesday. But yeah, after that, we have got more serious action. We head down to Bristol even to face Bristol City on a Friday night. That's televised on Sky, or probably where, I think it's on ESPN3 over in the States. I'm not sure where you'll catch it, Ronson.
Probably through the app or AVTV or whatever I can to do there.
Fair enough. Well, it should be. I mean, if it's screened on a TV, it should be broadcast or syndicated on something you can reach, surely. But yeah, this is an important game. If Villa travel to this match playing negatively, that's the bubble burst again, right?
Yeah, and it's that kind of part of the year where you do get that roller coaster of reaction. And I think that's something that we're going to get certainly until October.
So when we head down to Bristol and we lose, say we lose 3, but I think it was 3-1 last time we played Bristol away. That was one of the nails in the coffin for Di Matteo. Would it be one of the nails in the coffin for Steve Bruce if we were to lose on Friday badly?
Badly? That's a big
3-1
question.
Say if it's 3-1.
I think you still give him a chance because in his defense, like it's not like I'm married to the guy, but in his defense with Kodjo Grealish and Jednak out for the first stretch, I feel like he has a defense in saying, you know, I've tried to build this team to what my idea is for his tactics, and he hasn't necessarily been able to put that forward yet. And with such a good performance at Villa Park yesterday, I think he can point at those two things and say, you've got to give me time. You've got to give me an opportunity where, you know, maybe if we didn't look as good yesterday and we didn't have a couple of posts and we didn't have a couple of guys edging back from injury, well, then I think he's on a lot, you know, shorter of a boardwalk, right?
Yeah. I think if we get hammered, if we set up like we played against Reading and try not to get involved in the match and we lose, we're back to square one, aren't we? And till last until October, but nothing will, it'll just be a horrible atmosphere online and, you know, out of the stadium again. You don't want that. You just want this positive, you just want this culture that moves forward, win, lose or draw. And you don't have that if you don't set up to win or get a result out of games. The problem is it is an away game, so I feel like Steve Bruce won't carry those ideas from Norwich in. I mean, maybe we can expect to see Hourihan start again. We'll definitely expect to see Hourihan start, sorry. But the problem is, what if Davis isn't in the team anymore? What if Andre Green's back on the bench? What if we're still playing Alan Hutton? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If we haven't learned from our mistakes, then back to square one. And that's my big fear, because it's an away game. And Steve Bruce knows that these away games are really tricky for us. For whatever reason, we can't get things done away from home, and that's a real concern.
Now, the pitch is the same size. They wear the same shoes.
Yep.
I have no idea how to explain his inability in that regard. So unless he finds a way not to build off the Norwich match, in that case, maybe I would support that idea of maybe getting on him a little bit more. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like I'm game with setting up defensively for away games because the home team is expected to go at you a bit more. They're expected to be aggressive, so you're going to counter and go, hang on, we're going to hold on to the ball, we're going to frustrate the team. But Steve Bruce played right into Reading's hands by pushing. I mean, the heat maps and touch maps show the ball was in our half, but we weren't keeping possession. We didn't want any of the ball. We just stayed away from it. And, you know, trying to do that and trying to set up in that fashion where you're going to spring forward on the counter-attack, it won't work. Not for us at the moment anyway. I'm really concerned because, as I said, it's an away game. We don't do well when it's not at Villa Park. And a big concern for me is that we don't learn anything from Norwich and we go into this and, you know, it's a tepid draw or it's a 3-1 to Bristol or a 1-0 to Bristol.
I would so much rather on away days that they would try to win 7-6 instead of just, as Steve Bruce would say, batting down the hatches. I would rather them try and win 7-6 or 10-9. I don't care. Like, I think that would almost be better for them the way that, you know, their talent is.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but I think that would be a better approach.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, you set back defensively for away games because it's obvious what's going to happen and you attack at home, and I just want Villa to do something, to be honest, in away games, because I just look to fold, you know, like a house of cards, just drop. And I just want to see them do something, complete honestly, everything on the table. Just do, if you're going to do anything, just do something, rather than they just didn't want any of the ball against Reading. That's a big mistake, just not wanting to get involved in the game, starting too late. You've got to have a plan from the get-go. Whether you're going to park the bus, whether you're going to play possession football, or whether you're going to hoof it, just have some kind of plan, something to exploit in the other team. And if we don't, it's going to be another tepid game.
Did it almost remind you of Roy Hodgson and England over Iceland with just the same frustrating garbage?
Yes, in the sense that you expect so much more from such a smart person and a genuine managerial talent in charge. You know, Steve Bruce has been around. It's weird because in football, it seems like managers get stupider with age. And I mean, that's really, like, Capello was a great talent, you know, managing Milan and all the teams he was in charge of, Juventus, I think, you know, when he was in charge of England, that's amazing, and he failed. Roy Hodgson, best season ever with Fulham, when that great escape was incredible. That's something that I'll never forget. He wasn't bad in any club he's been in. Liverpool was a bit dodgy, but you know, in the 90s with Switzerland and across Europe, he's a real, genuinely good manager. As he got older, and that his England team with Dyer.
Yeah.
Same with Steve Bruce. It's like, what's going on? Like, it seems like everyone wants younger managers, and it's weird because you feel like the younger managers haven't got experience, like Wagner and Klopp, Guardiola.
Melberg, as you were saying earlier.
Yeah, exactly, Melberg. All these young managers seem to get, you know, we want the young managers, but it's like a real irony in my head. It doesn't really work out because you'd expect the older managers to have more experience and know-how, and it just seems to fall apart for them.
Yeah, and it might be even just a stubbornness thing that they think that, well, if it worked 10 years ago, then they haven't seen enough of a change, right, you know?
Yeah, and football's fluid as well. New ideas win. That's simple. You come up with something new. Except if you're like Blantyre playing for Northern Ireland when he deployed the first ever wall in front of a free kick and Italy just buried it over him into the goal. New ideas usually work in football. You know, if you can find an exploit or a new way to play or at least a way to counter the other team, then you win. And I think older managers seem to be against doing things that aren't really tried and tested. But if they're tried and tested, the problem is that they've been done everywhere.
So. Yeah, and I think with age and management comes a range of experience that you can rely on that doesn't need new ideas, that becomes vulnerable to people with new ideas.
Exactly, like you line up Bruce against Guardiola or Klopp, and Bruce might pull off the win, you know, 3 or 4 times out of 10. But I'd give the majority of the wins to the younger manager, and that might sound like a huge prejudice. But if you look at all the talent across the globe, except for Wenger maybe, a lot of the managerial talent even is quite young, and Villa seem to be an outlier in that. I mean, Warnock's killing it with Cardiff, but Ipswich and McCarthy are doing good right now, but it doesn't seem like something that can carry on, especially due to what expected goals are telling us about their rate of finishing.
That's why I think it would be beneficial for clubs, especially like Villa, to promote more from within and develop somebody from a young age that can step up and have new ideas that isn't going to be antiquated by the time that they reach the point of being in charge.
Yeah, I mean, every big club has a way of playing football. And, you know, you have your Arsenal way, you have your Juventus way, you have your Milan way. Every big club has an identity that they play football with, and that's not the case for Villa. Even Huddersfield had their own identity last season, especially Newcastle as well. All these teams had their own on-pitch identity, and Steve Bruce is quite the chameleon in that we change styles and identities so often. And I think it's time to settle down and stick to our best and build something here. And Steve Bruce can be the man to build something for the future. We can learn from him, but it doesn't seem like it's going that way.
And I think a good youth class is where that starts, because if you have a group of young players who can come up together and learn a certain way, or you know exploit their talents as a youth class so that it only, you know, gets better and better and better as they move on, and then when you buy new players and bring new people in, they fit with those players, and you don't have to tell your young academy kids a new way of doing things. And I think that's where you have to start. And I think hopefully with the class that we have, you know, right now, I think that might be a bit of hope.
Yeah, I mean, individual player talent, I feel, is something that's quite overrated, in the sense that, yes, you know, 1 time out of 10, a great player will win you a game. But I think you need to bring through people who have got chemistry. Like the class of 92, for example, in United. First game they played, they lost against Villa, ironically. And Hansen said you can't win anything with kids. Now, Nicky Butt, Phil Neville, and to an extent Gary Neville, are not the most talented players you'll ever see. If they came through on their own at Villa now, you would probably not see them make much of an impact in the first team. But if you put them all together with... So you've got Phil Neville, Gary Neville, Nicky Butt, Paul Scholes, all those people together, Ryan Giggs as well. You know, it's all that chemistry built together. They've played through. They're playing a certain style of football. They know how to play together and they know how to win games. And the more people you can bring through from a class, you know, all that chemistry goes somewhere and it's demonstrable on the pitch.
Yep.
Perfect. Well, anything else from you, Ronson, today?
I think it's just good that we have some hope. it's a Sunday afternoon, or, you know, it's there's some hope. And I think watching the Norwich match really kind of left me thinking that, you know, if we do manage promotion this year, it might not be hopeless with what we can do at Villa Park. And if we can kind of, you know, keep our shoes on at away games, then maybe there's real hope moving forward with, you know, young players making a break. And we have guys coming back from injury really soon and an international break coming up where we can kind of set new things forward. So it's great timing coming up as well.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we weren't reading up into too much doom at Reading or too much joy at Norwich. There's a bit in between. I think it's okay to have some hope, but it's also okay to temper your expectations from the past. But I'd say, yeah, have a bit of hope going forward. It's a weekend. Enjoy your weekend. And yeah, you can go into the next week hoping a bit for a tiny bit more from Villa each and every week now. And if we fail, so be it. We're used to it by this point, wouldn't you say, Ronson?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's nothing new to us. But yeah, it's nice to go into the weekend with a little bit of hope. So yeah, that's it all from myself, James Rushton, at Jamie Rushton on Twitter, and Ronson for this week. So where can people find you, Ronson?
Yeah, best place to find me would be on Twitter. My handle is Ronson1313, or 1313 if you like.
Perfect. Yeah, excellent to have you on the show. That's all from me and all from the 112. That's 100th from 12th episode of the Hulkcast. Been going on for a very long time now. And we'll catch you next Sunday after the Wigan and Bristol games, heading into the international break. Catch you later. Bye.